Welcome once again to our study for March 21st, 2024 of the Common Era today. It is 16:35 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again, studying Chapter 9 at the present time of the Crucible of Credible Creed, an article first published in 2012. I keep forgetting when it was published. We won't get the date unless we look at part two, because it's at the end of part two. But I believe that's correct, 2012 for the Crucible article. I don't think we should bother checking it right now. Or should we? Well, where's part two? Let's see. It's right here. I probably have it open here somewhere. I have part two is probably open in one of my tabs currently. Just find it here. Is that it? Moses, Joseph, Ark of Urartu. We've got some short readings today. We've got more time today. And it's important to realize, when I was doing research on all of this, I was having immense difficulty, and my continued momentum depended on me discovering something important every single day. Every day I had to discover a major fact, or I had to make a major discovery every single day. And I, thanks to the blessing of Jehovah, I was able to do that. And I was talking to my late father, my late dad, at the time, and every day I'd keep telling him what my new discovery was at the time, and he would just wonder and say, well, if you can keep doing it, because he didn't seem to think it was possible to keep on, there it is, found it, to keep on making discoveries every single day, you know. And it normally, for me, wasn't in the past, but with the internet, it's partly the internet, but it wasn't just the internet that enabled me to do it, of course. Oh, I'm depending. I didn't do an audio test. I hope the audio is okay today. Forgot to do the test. But, I mean, in the past, I wouldn't have been able to continue making new discoveries on anything. I mean, why? But I had a reason to, because I needed to make a new discovery, or the whole chronology would collapse, or my effort would become futile. It depended on continued discovery. And that was not true of any other work I've ever done. Here it is. December 1st, 2012. On the 73rd birthday of Lee Trevino. That was when this was published. If we look at the timeline, it's going to be given here too. It was modified recently in the year 2023. You know, just minor typographical editing. But it was first published in April, it says here, wait a minute, April 7th, yeah, it was first published April 7th, 2012, okay, that's right. So I have not updated the December 12th, 2016 date there, which is given as the final edition, but it's been edited since then. And when we look at the bottom here, we say it was dedicated on December 1st, 2012 to Lee Trevino. And let's go back. How do we get back to where part one? Oh, way. It's way to the left. We've added so many tabs in between part one and part two now that it's hard to find part two. It's about 20 tabs to the right or something. Now, in our chronology, this paragraph today is chapter 9, paragraph 2, and it's not going to be necessary to really study this in detail, but because we've since realized that it's not so critical as knowing when David lived or died, or when the end of Solomon's reign was, or what, you know, I mean, exactly, we need to know when the end of Solomon's reign was. But we need to know what we believe after all the research of the articles that came after this as well. And it's only different by 1 year here, so we don't have to worry. But the most difficult thing to obtain, I write here, is the absolute dating. In other words, more exactly, perhaps, but also absolute dating. We have to know that it's absolute and not just, positioned relative to some other date, which is the reason that further calculation is warranted. So we want to try and ascertain, is it an absolute date? Based on absolute time, positioned correctly in history, exactly relative to everything. So that's absolute, not just relative to some other king. Not only do we have the list of kings with reign lengths, that's really important. We have a list of kings in the Bible with the reign lengths for each king, how many years each one ruled. And we also know, in many cases, how old the king was when he became king. And that enables us, since we also know that each successive king was the son of the previous king, that enables us to determine how long each generation was also. It's a remarkable thing, but we're going to talk about that in the next paragraph. Not only do we have the list of kings with the reign lengths, but we also have the prophecy of Ezekiel of 390 years from the error of Israel. The error of Israel was very logically when Jeroboam was not so logical, but it was clear that that was the error when first committed by Jeroboam in splitting off the 10 tribes from the overall 12-tribe group of the nation of Israel, which happened in the year 977, is what we think now. It said here we've given the date as 978 for that to have occurred. So it only differs by 1 year. It's not critical, it's not very important. This agrees with the siege of Jerusalem. Now, the thing is, it is important, and that's why we did change it, but it doesn't seem to be all that important, so just bear it in mind that we changed our mind later. This agrees with the siege of Jerusalem in 978 minus 390. Okay, if the error of Israel, according to Ezekiel, was 390 days, and 1 day for 1 year would be 390 years, which is the prophetic interpretation of what a day is 1 year for each day of prophecy. That meant that 978 minus 390 would be the end of Israel, right? And the interesting thing was, that was pretty much the same year as the year that the city of Jerusalem was captured by Nebuchadnezzar. In this case, it was the siege, the beginning of the siege, since we started from the different year there. But the siege began in the ninth year of King Zedekiah, and it ended, that was late in the ninth year of King Zedekiah, and it ended early, or in the middle of, sort of early, mid-early of year 11 of King Zedekiah. So it was 18 months, the siege itself, and therefore it ended in 587 BCE rather than 586, but we know when it ended based on all of the evidence that we have that we've presented and we will present in more detail, in the future, and also it's been presented in the articles already, why we believe 587 is the correct date for the capture of Jerusalem. But also, when we add the 390 to the 587, we get 977. Instead of 978, and that's what we believe now is the time of the dividing of the kingdom of Israel. That was the beginning of their error, right? But it ended with Jerusalem being destroyed, which is not quite understandable, perhaps, because it was the northern kingdom that split off, not really Judah, but Judah is held accountable for that, according to this prophecy and the numbers, the way they add up. But Jerusalem was destroyed as it says here, in the 11th year of King Zedekiah. But we now believe that's 587, not 586. Just 1 year different. Furthermore, the error of Judah is given in the same book of Ezekiel as 40 years, which is also interpreted as the time from, well, 587 plus 40 is 627, which is year 13 of Josiah, which was the beginning of the preaching of Jeremiah, according to the book of Jeremiah, when he talks about the 13th year of Josiah. So that 40 years is one interpretation of that prophecy of Ezekiel 4:6. But there's another interpretation, of course, from the crucifixion of Jesus Christ in the year 30 CE, 40 years from that point, arriving at 70 CE, which is the destruction of Jerusalem by the Roman army in 70 CE. So that's the 40 years also fulfilled, which is the length also of King Solomon's reign, 40 years. So it's interesting because the 40 and 390 add to make 430 total in the prophecy of Ezekiel for the error of Israel, or Judah and Israel, respectively. And that's also true that the total number of the kings of Israel from Solomon all the way until the destruction of the temple and capture of Jerusalem in 587, that total length of time from 1017 to 587 is also, that's year one of Solomon to the destruction of the temple, is that total is 430 years, which we corrected from the previous paragraph where we said 431. So it's a wonderful it's by the grace of the true God, you know, by the grace of God, it is a wonderful prophetic fulfillment, and also it's a nice way to do the arithmetic. You know, it's very convenient, I should say. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. It's convenient to have these numbers add up. When we take, now there's only one rule, according to the Insight book, published by the Watchtower Society, there's only one king in all the kings of Israel whose reign overlapped with another one, and that's Jehoshaphat's reign overlapping with his son Jehoram. So that's why it's 430 and not some, you know, if their reigns didn't overlap, it wouldn't be 430. But their reigns did overlap, and it said that Jehoram began to rule while Jehoshaphat was still ruling. So we know there was an overlap. We also know that King David was living when King Solomon began to rule, right? So and we know that King David ruled from 1058 to 1017 BCE. If he ruled 40 and a half years, we could see that it could be that. We could also take it as being ruling from 1058 to 1018, which is what we did initially in our calculations. But anyway, all of that works out that we don't have to worry about what it says here about the Jewish year, because we're doing all our regnal calculations after this article. We've done the calculations using the, not the Jewish secular year, but the Jewish sacred year, the sacred year that begins in the springtime. And nowadays we use the Gregorian calendar also, whereas back then we can't use the Gregorian calendar because that's not what's used for ancient dates. But I gave the Gregorian calendar just for reference here as to what date the Jewish calendar year began in the year 1018 BCE there. It's only of mild interest, but historical calculations are always done using Julian dates, as I mentioned thereafter in this paragraph, rather than Gregorian dates for dates before 1582, because the Gregorian calendar first came into use in the year 1582 CE. So the day of Nisan first, I give information about that as well. But we need to know the exact lunar calendar that was used. In other words, we have to know what was the first month of the lunar year? You know, if we want to be exact about it, we have to know what they did, and we don't know that exactly. We don't know the exact method they used. We think we know, and we've talked about it already. We're going to talk about it when we talk about the article Joseph as well. A simple model, not the truth, could have King Solomon being crowned between Julian, March 19th and September 12th, and King David dying during the Jewish year, which began September 12th, 1018. Since David's reign would then finish out that year and Solomon's reign would officially begin as of 1017 BCE. But these details are not well known, I would say. As the truth, quote in quotes, the truth, might say conceivably differ in many details from this model, we seek further confirmation of the years in other ways. Right, we don't know if this is the truth, what we're saying here in this paragraph, and I wasn't sure of these exact details, but that's why we sought further confirmation, such as from David's genealogy, his own genealogy, which we're going to talk about next. That's the end of our study for today in the Crucible article. And so this is how we arrive at these absolute dates, is by analyzing from different ways, including the genealogical calculations. So let's do our scripture for the proverb for today. Shall we? Let's see if we can find it, first of all. Where is it? There it is. Okay. Okay, good. Let's get it bigger. Well, we were on 8, Proverbs 14, chapter 8, in the Ward Green version. And verse 9 for today, little children, is the following. A fool is the one who is mocking at guilt. The righteous delight when a man is upbuilt. That is food for thought, is it not? No rhyme intended in that last statement. So look at 2 Chronicles now, chapter 12. And it came about that as soon as the kingship of Rehoboam was firmly established, and as soon as he was strong, he left the law of Jehovah. So remember, they followed the law for 3 years, and also all Israel with him. They all left the law, and it came about in the fifth year of King Rehoboam. This is the most significant chronological event that happened around this time, that Shishak, the king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem, for they had behaved unfaithfully toward Jehovah, with 1,200 chariots and with 60,000 horsemen, and there was no number to the people that came with him out of Egypt, Libyans, Sukkim, and Ethiopians. Shoshank the first is the king who has been identified as Shishak, although there is some controversy among certain circles of scholars, but it's not a controversial issue. It's been long held and long believed that Shoshank was Shishak. There's a lot of evidence we're going to talk about in the Crucible article, too, about that. So he's Shoshank, and because of that, we can determine all kinds of things about his genealogy also. It's remarkable that we have this time alignment between the Bible and Egypt's chronology. It's very important. And year 5 of Rehoboam is the year 973 BCE in our chronology, 4 years after 977, which we just mentioned was the end of King Solomon's reign, Solomon being the father of Rehoboam. So Shishak, in the fifth year of Rehoboam, came up, which is 973 BCE in our chronology. And now, you know, different people might, like, for example, other scholars have different dates for that. Christine Tetley said 977 was the fifth year of Rehoboam in her chronology, for example. But she was close to our same date, whereas most others are not close to the date we have. We believe ours is correct, though. We have a lot of evidence, which we presented in these articles. Many, many articles on the subject that all correlate the chronology and make it absolute. And verse 4, this king, Shoshank, got to capture the fortified cities that belonged to Judah and finally came as far as Jerusalem. He came to Jerusalem, okay, and then he took things away when he stole from Jerusalem the things of the temple that were made of gold. He took things away. And in verse 9, it mentions that. I want to show you something, little children, in our article, one of the articles that was written here. Where is it? Here it is. Here it is, yeah. In the Trojan War article, this is one of the landmark articles of the Chronology of Egypt, was the Trojan War article. And absolutely, groundbreaking article on the Egyptian chronology. Here we gave the death of Shoshenq in 959. So the death-to-death calculation of nine generations from the death of Shoshenq to the death of the priest, Pasenhor, is calculated here as 27.3 years per generation, assuming that the priest was 20 years old at the time he installed the Apis bull in the 37th year of Shoshenq V, whose year one was 805. Was 805 for year one, as established by the Trojan War article for Shoshenq V, year one. 805, and then we have to add these other numbers, 37. But the 55, this assumes he also that he lived, well, it assumes that he lived 55 more years. It doesn't assume he's 20 years old necessarily, but it assumes he lived 55 more years after he installed this Apis bull. So that gives us 27.3. But if we go from birth to birth also, we have Shoshenq the first, if we assume he was born in 1049, Pasenhor, if we assume he was 20 years old, so in other words, he lived to be 75, which is possible he could have lived longer, or could have been older at the time of this installation of the Apis bull also, older than 20, but we assumed these numbers, and we arrived at 29 years per generation, birth to birth, which is both of which are very reasonable numbers for the death-to-death and birth-to-birth calculated there. So we have a remarkable, important piece of information there about Shoshenq, who is evidently Shishak of the Bible, Second Chronicles 12, and also it was mentioned in the Book of Kings, this incursion of Egypt into Israel. So let's just move on and read our other portion for today. I think we should do that because we're going to run out of time very soon, I think, if we don't move on to the book of Jonah. We have Jonah. Let's go back, first of all, chapter 1. We saw that, who was it who appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah? Was it the men aboard the boat who appointed the great fish, little children? No, it was Yahweh, the true God, who appointed the great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah chapter 2 now. Then Jonah prayed to Jehovah his God from the inward parts of the fish and said, we can only imagine what he was thinking, or feeling rather, but this is what he was thinking, or praying. Out of my distress I called out to Jehovah, and he proceeded to answer me. Isn't that a positive way of saying it? Instead of saying, help Jehovah, he said to Jehovah, out of my distress I called out to Jehovah, and he proceeded to answer me. In other words, he predetermined in his prayer that he was going to be answered. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried for help. You heard my voice. See, he envisioned it happening. When you threw me to the depths, into the heart of the open sea, then a very river encircled me. All your breakers and your waves over me, they passed on. Yeah, imagine when he was first thrown into the water, and all the waves and the freezing cold waters of the sea engulfed him, and he must have felt, and it was possibly it was dark. I'm not sure if it was nighttime, was it? Do we know that? But it was a raging storm. The darkness of the storm certainly was there. All your breakers and your waves over me, they passed on. you know, you can imagine he felt very, very afraid and insignificant. And perhaps he felt that he was about to perish, right? When he was first thrown into the depths. And as for me, I said, verse 4, I have been driven away from in front of your eyes. Talking to Jehovah, how shall I gaze again upon your holy temple? The temple of Yahweh. Waters encircled me clear to the soul. The watery deep itself kept enclosing me. So he felt like maybe claustrophobic, it sounds like, enclosed and confined by the water, engulfed. Weeds were wound around my head. Doesn't sound promising, does it, for survival? To the bottoms of the mountains I went down. As for the earth, its bars were upon me for time indefinite. But then read what it says. But out of the pit you proceeded to bring up my life, O Yahweh my God. So out of the pit is the symbol for the grave or death, you know. When my soul fainted away within me, Jehovah was the one whom I remembered. He thought of Jehovah when he felt he was going to die, in other words. Then my prayer came into you, into your holy temple. As for those who are observing the idols of untruth, we know that idols are false gods, they leave their own loving kindness. And typically when I say we know something, I'm always talking about the Bible. We know it from the Bible, unless I give a reference. And even then, I will often try to refer to the Bible, but we can't always refer back to every single scripture for everything we say. But as for me, with the voice of thanksgiving, I will sacrifice to you, Jonah said to Jehovah. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to Jehovah. In time, Yahweh commanded the fish so that it vomited out Jonah onto the dry land. And that's the book of Jonah, chapter 2, that we have just concluded. Little children, I hope you enjoyed that. This is a fairly well-known account from the Bible that people teach their children in many God-fearing homes. We've all, at least speaking for myself, it seems to me that we've all heard this story, but that's just my viewpoint. I know that there are probably many people who've never heard this story, but we've all, as Christians anyway, heard this story because we've been taught by our parents when we learned the Bible from our parents. So this is a very, very useful story, like the story of David and Goliath, a very instructive and inspiring story. But perhaps the David and Goliath story inspires in a completely different way. This story inspires by teaching us that we depend upon a higher power, and that we call out or envision being saved by this higher power, who is a power, who is a person, not just a power, but a person possessing power, whose name is represented in the Hebrew by the four-letter name that's called the Tetragrammaton in the Hebrew language, which had no vowels. It's four consonants in the Hebrew language, in the Abjad of the Hebrew language, which is consisting only of consonants. There are no vowels in the Hebrew Abjad. All Abjads are simply consonants alone. And so these four letters, J-H-V-H or YHWH are the four letters of the Tetragrammaton, depending on how you transliterate it. Transliterate meaning translate the letters from one language to another language using the alphabet or the abjad. Translating the Hebrew abjad into the Roman alphabet, which we use in English, to arrive at these four-letter representations, JHVH, which we've then added vowels to obtain Jehovah, or YHWH, to which we've added the vowels to obtain Yahweh. We added A, it's YAHWEH, Yahweh. And that's the story of the first part of the book of Jonah, the first two-thirds, I guess, because we've got Jonah, or the first one-half, actually. There are four chapters in the book of Jonah. For a moment there, I thought three. There are four. So it's going to be interesting, I think, to see the rest of this chapter, I mean book, the book of Jonah. It's going to be interesting. We could learn... little children, if you are interested in knowing your Bible, you can learn the order of progression of the books of the Bible. If we just consider, let's just consider the part from Ezekiel on. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, those are the books of that last part of the, what's called the Hebrew Scriptures sometimes, but it's also the Greek Septuagint, the last part of it in the order in which we are using it, which is also the Masoretic, well, I'm not sure if the Masoretic text has that format at all, of course. The Jews didn't use that format. They didn't use the same format in their Masoretic text. But when the Masoretic text was translated, and also the Septuagint, into English and other languages, it was put in this form that we have now that is in the order which I just mentioned. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. You can learn that order, and you can learn the order of the first, you know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, etc. We just ran out of time. It's Thursday, March 21st, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 17:08 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.